Well, good morning, everybody. It's Friday here at Coast Community Radio. I'm your host, Jim Wilkins, ably assisted by Terry Wilson, engineer par excellence. And happy to have you with us. I'm pleased to have in the studio with me Tiffany Estes, and we're going to be talking about a lot of the stuff that she does here in town. But before we get to that, Tiffany, tell me a little bit about yourself and your biographical background.
Okay. Well, a lot of people know Brett and I are native Texans. That's where we started out, and I lived my first 30 years there and grew up in a town that has a lot of similarities to Astoria. It was a town of about 10,000 people right on the Gulf Coast, blue-collar roots.
What was the name of it?
Port Lavaca.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And a lot of fishing in the community. My dad had a shrimp boat for a while, so I have that in my background, towboats, barges. My family is kind of entrenched in the maritime industry. So when we came to Astoria, there were a lot of familiar feelings about it, and I kind of felt at home pretty early on. So that was my childhood. I went to school in Texas. I got started in my career there, and got an advertising degree that kind of led me into marketing and design.
And you went where?
University of Texas at Austin.
And Brett went to where?
Texas A&M, that other school in Texas. We have friends actually that seriously say they would not marry someone from the other school. So we're kind of a rarity.
And that would be similar, I suppose, to the ducks and the beavers here in
Oregon.
Yeah,
pretty much.
Yeah. So how did you get to Oregon from Texas?
Well, it was kind of a summer of a few different vacations. Brett and I were in a situation where we were we'd only been married for maybe 3 or 4 years, and our living and work situation kept us in three different communities. So he worked in one place, I worked in another place about 100 miles away. We lived in the middle, and we both had horrible commutes every day. He had a long distance, I had a lot of traffic. So we were spending 2 hours in the car every day, minimum, each of us. And we wanted to go someplace else, but between the two of us, we'd kind of hit all of the major cities in Texas. Either he had grown up there or I had lived there. And we didn't want to go back to those places again. So we decided we'd try something completely different. And with his background in planning and mine in the creative industry, Oregon and specifically Portland, that area could be good for both of us. So we kind of started looking at that as a target, and we visited Seattle, we visited Portland, we kind of spent a week in both places and did some exploring and investigating, and we made the decision we wanted to come to the Portland area, and Brett worked on finding the right job for him, and then the idea was that I would start my own business at that point, so we didn't have two people trying to get jobs at the same time. So while he was searching for a job, I was freelancing on the side outside my regular job to save up money so that I could support myself for those first 3 or 4 months in Oregon and see whether I was going to make it or not. So that's kind of how that story went.
Just for the information of our listeners, Tiffany Estes is married to Brett Estes, and that's the Brett she refers to. Brett is currently the interim city manager for City of Astoria, and I understand will probably be applying for the permanent position. So some of our listeners might not know that. But so you came to Portland, but did you actually work in Portland, or did you settle immediately into Hillsboro?
We settled in Hillsboro. That's where his job was, the job that he was able to get. And it actually worked out really well because it allowed me to start my business in a smaller community than Portland. And there's kind of an interesting dynamic there. I found that the people in Hillsboro, the businesses, really wanted to work with other Hillsboro businesses, and rather than going to Portland for professional services. And at the time, there were not very many people doing what I did. So I got a lot of opportunities in Hillsboro. And I also got engaged in the community right away because I didn't know anybody. And there just it worked out really, really well. I was able to work with a lot of the kind of the players in Hillsboro and get to know them. And I did that a lot by working with them in the chamber or the Rotary Club or the market. Those are all organizations I served on the boards of. And so I could get to know those people in a non-sales environment, and they would learn to trust me and kind of understand what I did. And I would end up working with them at some point down the line.
Cool. Now, before we get into that a little bit more, I'd like to back up and go back to Texas.
Uh-huh.
You know, a local writer here, well, is actually from Philadelphia, Buzz Bissinger, and we talked about before we went on the air, wrote a book that became very popular, a bestseller, Friday Night Lights. Have you read that book?
I have, and I've seen the movie.
Yeah, and the TV series. But
I love the TV series.
I'd like you to comment upon the on that dynamic in Texas, that high school football kind of taking over entire towns.
Mm-hmm. I felt like the book, the movie, the TV series were all very authentic. They were all very true to life in terms of what I experienced. I grew up in one of those small towns.
Now, he went down there and lived in, what, Odessa?
I think so. I think it was Odessa, Midland area. And it's like religion, Friday nights. And it's kind of the community center. You know, people go to the football game. And for a lot of the smaller communities, particularly if they're very isolated, that's where you go and socialize. Mm. And the competitiveness and everything that comes through in the book, the movie, the TV show, all very real. And you even see articles now about the exorbitant amounts of money that school districts are spending on stadiums in mm-hmm. certain areas. I mean, millions and millions and millions of dollars. And it doesn't seem to have a lot of resistance. Some people would argue that that money needs to be spent on, you know, education instead of athletics. But athletics are a big part of life there, and that it goes into the college system too. So
yeah, well, Buzz is living part-time across the river, and I've got him scheduled to come visit with us on this show sometime in June. I haven't been able to pin him down.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so let's get back to Hillsboro.
Uh-huh.
And the creative stuff that you did, what exactly was that?
So I started out as a graphic designer. So I was creating ads and brochures and a lot of print material for the companies that I worked for and later the clients that I worked for. I started writing along the way because I was finding that a lot of projects were getting stalled because the client or the person who was supposed to be writing the material wouldn't produce it. So I ended up doing a lot of writing too, and now I actually, that's a large part of what I
like
do.
Copywriting,
right? Yeah. So writing for websites, designing websites. I actually write for other creative agencies as well. You know, they don't have the time to do their own promotional work. Mm-hmm. And so they'll hire me or someone like me to get that work done so they can focus on their paid projects. I do the same thing sometimes. I want to work for other people and bring in, you know, the billable hours and get help with my own material. It's also a lot of times very difficult to work on your own stuff. So it's hard to be objective and step back from it, and you end up spending a lot more time on it than you should. So, but overall, it's marketing strategy. It's producing materials that help people sell their services, their products, their ideas. I've done a lot of kind of more strategy and advising work recently too. Whether it's I've worked with the mayor in Hillsboro on the State of the City address for the last 3 years. That's kind of fun. So I like to do some of those projects with more than kind of meaty thinking and strategy piece to it.
Well, I'm curious if you knew somebody that had a small consulting firm, who happens to be sitting in front of you right now.
Uh-huh.
What kind of strategies would you suggest as far as marketing that kind of a business?
Mm-hmm. I think you have to know who your customers are right now and who your targets are and what they pay attention to. I have a lot of small business clients that come to me and say, "Oh, we think we need to be on Facebook, we need to do social media, we need to do this or that." And the first question I'll ask them is, "Are your customers using that?
Right.
Are your target markets using that? If not, then we need to spend our energy someplace else." A lot of businesses are finding more success in kind of the personal outreach, one-on-one communication instead of mass, blasting with ads or direct mail and things like that. I'm seeing a lot of people have success with targeted email marketing, reaching out to people that way and being a little bit more personal about it than feeling like you're just getting a generic piece of marketing.
I'm curious about the social media that you referred to. What kind of market penetration do you get with something like Facebook? How many people, out of 100 people, how many people are going to be paying attention to Facebook?
It varies. It really depends on your business and your customer base. I see a lot of retail businesses in Astoria that I think have a lot of success on Facebook because a lot of people in Astoria are on it and they see that and it is something that appeals to them. It's, hey, we just came out with a fresh bread at Blue Scorcher or something like that. They'll see that and head down. But if you're in a consulting situation and your clients are not on Facebook, it doesn't make sense to go there. You might want to be on LinkedIn or something like that where it's more geared toward professional services than I think of Facebook as being a lot of retail and more impulse type purchases. There's certainly value in getting information out about what you're doing, but it's only if your customers are tuned into that.
Yeah, I signed up for Facebook, and I get all of this stuff coming in my email. I don't care about it.
Yeah.
But, it's an interesting phenomenon, I suppose. But what I was trying to get at is, how many people go online? I mean, out of the general population, do most people have computers? And
a lot of people do. I think a lot of it's age related. Certainly, younger people are more active online, but you're now seeing even, people that are at the end of their careers or into retirement are online in increasing numbers. And what's even more interesting to me is that is the shift from, a desktop computer or a laptop computer to mobile devices. So you see a lot of companies kind of gearing their online presence to mobile devices instead of the desktop or the laptop, because for a lot of people, particularly lower income people or even international, countries around the world that maybe are not as advanced, people do have mobile devices. They may not have a computer at all, and that's their only connection to the internet. So I think you're seeing things become a lot more geared for mobile and simplicity. It's not about, how fancy can I make this? It's how useful can I make this across a lot of different entry points.
Now, I see it's time to do my mid-show routine. This is Coast Community Radio. I'm your host, Jim Wilkins, and it is Friday, and we are visiting with Tiffany Estes. And I'm just about to ask Tiffany, you were describing your activities in Hillsboro. How did you get from Hillsboro down to Astoria?
So that's a funny story. Brett and I would do a 3-day weekend in Astoria every year on the Martin Luther King holiday. And that was kind of our post-Christmas decompression. We needed a vacation from our vacation because it's all family visiting and it's kind of stressful. So we would make a habit of coming to Astoria for the MLK weekend. And we came in 2007. We went to, I think it was Art Walk weekend maybe. And there was a piece of art at River Sea Gallery that really resonated with me. And it was of a political nature about people not getting along in the community, fighting about everything. And it just struck a chord with me based on what I was experiencing in Hillsborough at the time with some different volunteer activities I was into. And I bought the piece of art, but we were going to have to come back to get it after the show was over, or after the exhibit was over. So we planned to come back a few months later, I think it was in April, to pick it up. And we spent another weekend here. And that's when we were kind of packing up, getting ready to go home on Sunday. And Brett was reading the newspaper, and we saw that Todd Scott's position, his predecessor's position, was open. And ironically, I had worked with Todd Scott maybe a year or two earlier on some brochures for the city. Mm-hmm. And I said, you know what? I know Todd Scott. We should call him and find out what the story is. You know, why is he leaving? What's the job about? What's it like? And so we did that. And we literally spent the entire trip home on Sunday strategizing, you know, how could we make this work? If you were able to get this job, what would it mean for my business, you know, moving it from Hillsborough to Astoria? And then I nagged him incessantly for like a month. Have you done your application yet? And what's the status? And it kind of was a long process because we had the landslide on Bond Street, I believe, that kind of preoccupied Paul for a while. But ultimately, he got the interview and got the position, and that's how we got here.
Hmm.
Yeah.
So compare Hillsborough to Astoria.
Wow. they're very, very different communities. What the people in Hillsborough call Old Hillsborough, kind of the core around the downtown area and the families who have been there for a long, long time, there are a lot of similarities, very community oriented, very let's get, you know, work together, get things done. That part is similar, but almost everything else is different. Their economic landscape is very different. Intel is there. They've got a lot of high tech companies right there, big employers, but they can't. They're having trouble, I think, capturing or recapturing what their old town is all about, and keeping that as kind of what I call their soul, you know, keeping mm-hmm. that, preserving that, and giving someone, giving people a reason to come and to connect with the community. And it's hard to do that when you've got, you know, all of this kind of industrial growth happening, and people aren't sure if they are in Hillsborough or Beaverton or Tannisbourne, or, you know, there's an identity crisis going on, I think.
Well, there's been a big influx there of Latinos as well.
Right, right. Which was kind of interesting to me because coming from Texas, you know, that's part of your community. It's not something new.
Right.
But when I came to Hillsborough, Latinos had already been there. They were working in the agriculture industry, but they were starting in increasing numbers to establish businesses and be more visible in the community. And there was kind of this question of what do we do? How do we bring them in and make sure we're all working together? And that was a foreign concept to me because that's how it always was in Texas. You know, it was just, you know, we were, I guess, much further down the road of living together and working together and making it all gel.
You know, for years I was in the heavy construction business, and I knew a lot of contractors from that area, and they would bitterly complain about the Latinos. In fact, actually physically discriminating against them.
Uh-huh.
Did you notice that discrimination from your perspective?
I didn't notice discrimination as much as we don't know how to engage with them and make them, you know, make this one community instead of two. And I remember telling one of the community leaders, you need to get the Latino community at the table with you, because if not, what I saw happen in some cases in Texas is they'll form their own chamber of commerce. They'll form all of their own organizations to serve their specific needs, and ideally you want everyone working together. So it's important to get them engaged early. But I, you know, I'm sure there was and is discrimination happening. I was not exposed to it as much because the business community was very interested in embracing that and figuring out how to, you know, how to bring it all together and make it work. But I'm sure there were some unpleasant, things happening.
So were you successful in bringing those communities together?
I think it is a work in progress. The chamber has worked there. There's a Latino festival. There are they have made definitely outreach efforts to engage with them, but it's an ongoing process.
Now, you've been in Astoria how long?
Almost 7 years.
Oh, I didn't realize it was that long.
Mm-hmm.
So give me a kind of a quick take on your perspective of Astoria, having come from this really diverse background.
Well, it's, I think Astoria had already begun its renaissance when we got here. So I have a harder time relating to what was going on here in the 70s and the 80s when things were really tough for people. I can only imagine, you know, based on what I've heard, but it feels to me like people are coming together more than they might have in the past, and they're seeing some good things happening. So people they seem to be a little bit more optimistic and excited about things that are happening in the community, whether it's economic development or new amenities coming into the community and things like that. And I just met with a guy yesterday in Portland who's a photographer and a web developer, and he loves Astoria and wants to move here. And just talking to him about the places he'd been, and he's like, "Oh, I was at the Labor Temple and we did karaoke," and and it got me excited about the place that I live all over again, because this person who had just had a few exposures to it was so wow, this is such a cool place.
Yeah, it's really hard to tell, but from my perspective, it seems like we're seeing an influx of those kind of mm-hmm. people into Astoria, people that just want to be here.
Right, and the trick is, how do you make your living so that you can stay here? And that's what I talked with him about a little bit, and occasionally people will reach out to me if they're considering moving here or it's something that they're interested in. And I told him the same thing that I tell others, particularly in a creative field. You know, certainly there are clients here and people that you can work with here, but there are also already established businesses that are doing what you're doing. So yeah, come in, expect to get some clients, but you're going to need clients from other places too if you want to pay rent and keep, groceries coming in. So, I don't advise people to come in thinking that, particularly if they're doing, consulting or creative work, that you're going to get all of your business, within a 30-mile radius of where you live, to be prepared to be reaching out.
Well, with high-speed internet, that's more doable.
Certainly. And I think that's why you're seeing more people coming in, because if they're already established and working, this guy had clients in Los Angeles that he works with. So if you've already got some connections, it's very doable. I wasn't sure what was going to happen with me, and I retained almost all of my clients and have built more here.
Mm-hmm.
So it's worked out just fine.
Yeah, I'm thinking of a guy that I've come to know, Eric Bouchard, who spent 10 or 12 years wanting to move to Astoria and doing various maneuvers to pull it off, and he finally did. He started a restaurant called Albatross.
Oh, right.
That's become really successful, and he's expanding, and so it's possible to do it. He was very careful about the steps that he took to get here.
Right.
So when he got here, he's pretty well set up.
Right.
Now, I have a question that's been submitted by somebody, somebody named Terry. Let's see, do you have any problem with the government taking over the internet if they do? Terry, could you amplify on what you're asking here, please?
Well, it's just that the people who control issue the call signs, as you will, for the internet, I guess that's going away, and there's big talk about the government taking over the internet.
I think that ship may have already sailed. I don't know how they can wrap their arms around.
But so big.
Yeah. I mean, I would hate to see that happen, because when you look at places like China or you know, other countries outside the U.S., there's a lot of content they can't access because their government is blocking it. And that, you know, there's a lot of garbage out there that you don't want to find anyway, but I want to have the freedom to find it or not.
The free flowing of information.
Right. That's what the whole concept is. And if you start filtering that, then I don't think that's a good thing.
Well, there you have it. You know, another thing that I'm kind of starting to focus on here for the next couple of months is the Coast Guard presence in Astoria. The wonderful people. Have you gotten to know about the Coast Guard at all?
I would say most of my... I have been exposed to the Coast Guard quite a bit on the Gulf Coast. I worked a great deal with an industry association there that had close ties to the Coast Guard and the Corps, and I was always really impressed with the way that they conduct their business. I mean, just really great people in it to find solutions and to make things work better. And they're great people.
Have you had any opportunity to work with the folks out at the Job Corps Center?
I have, just kind of isolated incidences, but we have worked with them on, you know, had volunteers for different cleanup projects and things like that. And I think the program out there is outstanding, and what they're doing for their students is really commendable.
Now, I suspect you probably know it, but this weekend is the Greater Astoria Crab Festival.
Yeah.
Have you been doing any work on that?
The Rotary Club that I'm a part of does the crab dinner. Mm-hmm. So I've been out there, I think, every year but one, slinging crab. I'll be out there Saturday evening.
Oh.
Yeah, so that's our big fundraiser for the year, and it funds scholarships for local high school students.
What other interesting projects are on your horizon?
Oh.
Ones that you can talk about.
I mean, lots of things are happening with work in terms of getting into some higher level strategic projects and doing some branding work. So I'm excited about that. Downtown has kind of taken on a life of its own, and that program continues to evolve and grow. And we've got a lot, you know, the beer festival coming up in September. That's going to be a big effort for us. That's how we pay for our director now. So we need people to go out and buy glasses and drink beer.
Explain that to me. The selling of the beer pays for what?
So the people who go to the brew cup buy a glass, and that mm-hmm. is their kind of ticket to taste so many beers with tokens that they get. And the money that we raise from that event is a large chunk of what it takes to pay the salary of our director that we have. You know, the Downtown Association didn't have a staff person for over, 20 years. So, you know, that we've got to pay a salary and taxes and all of that stuff and rent for office space. So that's a big source of the revenue to cover that.
So you're part of the Downtown Association?
I am, yes. Okay. I'm on the board and part of the group that kind of got it going again probably about 4 or 5 years
gotcha.
Ago.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's about time to wind it up here. Tiffany Estes, I really appreciate you coming in to talk with us. It's been very enjoyable for
sure.
Me.
Thank you.
Next week, we're going to have Josh Marquis here, and we'll talk with him about various issues. Meanwhile, thanks for listening, folks, and stick around for Albert Smith and his always wonderful Friday Folk.